Well, it's like a dream for us, you know, to be here in Kuala Lumpur with you, our dear brother and sister of Malaysia, for our mission. You will hear now Father Tim Dieter. He's American, he's from the West, and he loves traveling in Asia to spread the good news. Don't miss his special way of teaching. I would say a very clear and also very human way of teaching the faith. Father Tim, you know, is a priest who is not afraid to speak the truth. His doctrine is really Catholic. Thank God, this is so precious nowadays, in our days of great confusion. And about Mary, he definitely knows her from the heart. Now, let's listen to him. Father Tim Dieter.
Well, let me talk about the first doctrine about Mary in order of its happening. It's not the first one in the order in which the church taught it, because it didn't get around to proclaiming this as a doctrine to be believed until 1848. But this is the doctrine of the Immaculate Conception, which occurs at the very beginning of Mary's life. A lot of Catholics think that the Immaculate Conception refers to the conception of Jesus inside the womb of Mary. It does not. The Immaculate Conception is about the beginning of Mary's life in the womb of her mother and father. And we don't know from the Bible what the names of her parents were, but earliest tradition of the church, which is pretty reliable, tells us that her mother's name was what? Anne, or Anna. And her father's name was? Joachim. Okay, so Joachim and Anne, the parents of Mary. And we always have to remember, they are the grandparents of Jesus. The grandparents of Jesus, on his mother's side. On Joseph's side, we know that the father of St. Joseph was named Matthan, M-A-T-T-H-A-N, because that's in the genealogy in St. Matthew. We only don't know Jesus' paternal grandfather on Joseph's side. Now, the Immaculate Conception, Anne and Joachim came together in a normal act of sexual intercourse. Just like every other child is conceived, Mary was not conceived miraculously. Her parents had a normal sexual union. But when we are conceived, all of us, we inherit the good, the bad, and the ugly about being human beings. We inherit all of the good. We do not have to discover fire. We do not have to invent electricity. We do not have to learn all over again how to build buildings. We do not start our lives living in burrows or in caves like the first primitive human beings did. We inherit all of the accumulated knowledge of humanity up to the point in which we are conceived. We inherit all the inventions, all the progress. We inherit all the knowledge that people have. We inherit all of the advances of civilization. We inherit all of the ways in which our family lives. We inherit our family name without earning it. We inherit our country. We inherit all of our culture. We inherit all of this without doing a thing to deserve it. That is the good part about being conceived and born a human being. We also inherit the bad and the ugly. We inherit all the wars. We inherit the poverty. We inherit the crimes. We inherit all of the problems that are left for us to try to solve in our generation. And we will not solve most of those problems. We will hand them on to another generation. But we try in each generation to give a little less evil. Unfortunately, it seems we keep giving more and more evil. We're not killing people anymore with knives and machetes, but now we have chemical warfare and biological warfare, where instead of hand-to-hand combat, killing people in a bloody way, we can wipe out whole cities with just a cloud of gas. So we keep handing on a legacy and inheritance of bad, of evil. And part of that is because we inherit original sin. Original sin, the first sin committed by our first parents, whom we call Adam and Eve, and that tendency that they developed toward pride and toward disobedience. You know, every other part of God's creation is humble. Every other part of God's creation is obedient. The seasons always follow every year, spring, summer, autumn, winter. They never go spring, winter, autumn, summer. They are always obedient, these seasons, every single year. The planets always go around in their orbits. They always move the same way. They never decide all of a sudden to turn the other way or start going up and down. They keep going around the same way. For eons, they have obeyed. The stars stay in their courses. The animals continue to do what animals are supposed to do. The water stays in its place. All of creation bows down to God and obeys His will. Only human beings decide that we are smarter than God and we will do things differently. And this is part of our pride. This is our original sin of disobedience. And we are all conceived with that. Not just born, but 9 months before we're born, we have it from the very first moment of our existence, at our conception. And Mary would have had it too. And she would have had to struggle with this evil in her all her life as we struggle with it, unless God had decided, if she's going to be the mother of my son on earth, if she is going to teach the Messiah how to be a good human being, then she has to be completely good. So God caused Mary to be conceived without original sin. And we call this conception, which was free from sin, which was pure and holy from its very beginning, the Immaculate Conception of Mary. It is her Immaculate Conception. We say, well, look now, Mary was without sin. It'd be easy for Mary to be without sin because she was immaculately conceived, so she never committed sins in her life. Aha! All of these doctrines about Mary also have something to do with us. Because, yes, we were conceived in original sin. But you know what? Original sin was taken away when we were baptized. Most of us were baptized shortly after we were born. A few here may have been baptized as adults, but most of us were born into Catholic families, were baptized shortly after we were born. In the old days, you used to be baptized on the very day of your birth. In fact, that's why we have birthday candles on the birthday cake. Because if you were baptized on the day you were born, then you received your birthday candle, your baptismal candle, which you put on your cake every year. Your birthday candles come from your baptismal candle. Did you know that? Yes. And you know, you ever see people bring their children to baptism and they have them in a white garment? You ever have that? Do that here? But sometimes mothers have these long dresses that go on down to the floor. I mean, what sense does that make? The baby can't fit into it. Why do they have these long dresses? Do you have that custom at all of having a long dress? Do you know why? Because it used to be, in the early church, everybody was an adult when they were baptized, except for the children of the families. And they would give them an adult-sized garment to wear so they could grow into it, because they wore their baptismal garment every time they came to church. And this is why we still have the custom of wearing our baptismal garment white on our First Communion Day, on our Confirmation Day, on our wedding day, and then it's supposed to be also on our funeral day. That the garment we receive on the day we are baptized, we wear throughout our entire life with Christ until the end. That's why the baby was given a long garment. Now people don't know, they get a long baptismal garment, they have no idea why they're doing this. But think what a beautiful custom it would be if we would restore that and give a child a long adult-sized garment and they would wear that at every significant event of their lives. You know, it would save a lot of clothing bills and renting things at weddings and first communions, you know.